I would like to publicly thank Lewis Hamilton from the bottom of my heart for doing this before pre-season testing, because I have 8 hours a day to fill in Bahrain when sometimes there isn't even a car on track. So this is a gift for a commentator who has to do F1 testing. Thank you so much.
Hello and welcome to an emergency edition of the Feeder Series podcast, taking over quickly and somewhat hastily arranged from Chris McCarthy's Transfer Weekly, with a slower than usual week for transfers. There was huge news in the Formula One world that we thought we'd better cover: the gigantic, seismic, world-changing news from Ferrari that Ollie Bearman is going to get six FP1 sessions with Haas. Can you believe it? This is changing everything, guys. I joke. Well, I somewhat joke. This is changing a lot, but it's also huge from the Lewis Hamilton news, of course. We're going to talk about it. We're not going to talk about Lewis Hamilton, what that means for Lewis Hamilton, what it means for Ferrari. But fortunately, Chris had got a crack team of Josh Revel, Alex Jakes, and now himself as pundit. And me, Jim Kimberley, is going to try and navigate this complete change of landscape in the junior ranks for what this means for promotion to Formula One. Because let's be honest, Alex, this changes everything. Lewis Hamilton has now vacated, or will vacate, his seat at Mercedes, and the consequences of which are huge. We've got Ollie Bearman, like I mentioned, with the Ferrari link. Kimi Antonelli, it's now got even more pressure on his shoulders. And who knows who goes to Mercedes? Esteban Ocon might go, which opens up somewhere. Alpine, the Rube Goldberg machine of this is massive. What's your take, immediate thoughts on how this affects the Feeder Series world?
Immediate thoughts. That is a fun summary. Well, this was originally meant to be a transfer weekly, and what a transfer. We've never seen anything like that before. I mean, for Formula One to scoop all of European football on transfer deadline day, I mean, unbelievable. And as you say, the repercussions are absolutely wild, really, because you can make a case for that. You can make so many cases for that second Mercedes seat, and you can argue for tried and tested. But as you say, no matter who is placed in that seat, sudden options are opening up. I thought it was great. Let's cover off from the top. I think it's great that yesterday, all you heard about and all you saw were pictures of 2005 and 2006, Fred Vasseur with slightly more hair, Lewis Hamilton, weirdly, with slightly less. And you had a situation whereby we're looking at them in European Formula 3, we're looking at them in GP2, and we're hearing some great stories. The great tale of Turkey, when Lewis insisted in taking all the rear downforce off, made a claim, but was with a team that would listen to him. And knowing that Fred Vasseur will be with Ferrari, you cannot overstate. That was such a big moment in the foundation of Lewis Hamilton. Not because he won the European Formula 3 championship, not because he won the GP2 championship, although it helps. It was massive because he was with a team that listened to him at a time that McLaren, the overarching driver program, was not. And I honestly think you can make a case that if Fred Vasseur, who was the third choice to replace as team principal, and he was no one's first choice. There's no way in my mind that Lewis Hamilton's with Ferrari without Fred there. So it is so strange how things work out. As for who's getting that Mercedes seat, as for the seats that is going to open in Formula One, usually you get into a point where there is an obvious path that's going to happen. At the time of recording, you can make the case for 10 different paths happening, from drivers that would excite everyone watching to drivers where you'd be like, really? You've gone tried and tested? Either way, it's going to completely scramble the grid. It leaves us with a Formula 2 championship, and I promise this answer is concluding. It leaves us with a Formula 2 championship with the best chance of promotion for multiple drivers since 2018.
I am so excited. There is actually something on the line this year. Chris, you are commentating on Formula 3 at the moment, so you've seen a lot of the drivers making their way up to Formula 2, where Alex is commentating, over the last year. And now these drivers have a chance, potentially, of doing what Leclerc, doing what Russell, doing what these drivers have done, doing what Piastri did, to go and make it to F1 on the first go with a rookie campaign in Formula 2. Your thoughts on what this changes in the Formula One world and the Formula Two world for this upcoming season?
It changes a lot, as Alex said. It's not only that, but a lot of contracts are coming to an end in Formula One for drivers as well, which means that wherever whoever goes to replace Lewis, you know, there's going to be lots of changes coming up, lots of seats opening up. So this is going to be a huge season for Formula Two, and what a time for us to bring a brand new car in to essentially stabilize the grid and throw experience for teams and drivers out the window almost, and put it to one side and give a level playing field and give a driver coming up from Freca almost an even chance to go and fight for the
two
title,
drivers which, coming up.
Yeah, two drivers, Joshua Dirksen as well, of course, who's flying the flag for his country for the first time as well. It's going to be such an exciting season. And of course, Lewis Hamilton going to Ferrari. There's a Ferrari Junior, a teammate to a Mercedes Junior as well, who's going to be eyeing up that seat for no doubt when Lewis Hamilton steps aside as well. He's looking at a possible step up. You know, he's got six FP1 sessions, as we were talking about before recording this, with Haas next this season as well. Yeah, we've got loads of other seats going up. It's going to be such a competitive season. I think that news yesterday, as we record this on the Friday, has just, I'm sure, got drivers in the gym even earlier this morning and got them on the sim even earlier this morning and got them hugely, hugely motivated for the season if they weren't already.
Josh, you are obviously famous for making terrifically accurate predictions before the season start, which you then come and revisit at the end on your YouTube channel. This isn't Formula One where you make those predictions, but it's Formula Two we're talking about a little bit. And there are multiple drivers now who aren't going to be following what we saw last year with no driver progression from Formula Two to Formula One. Is it right to say that potentially 3, 4, 5 drivers could make it into Formula One next year with this change, just because Lewis Hamilton has decided to switch teams, do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, who knows? I mean, not a lot of people did expect Lewis to do what he did, you know? But with that, you look at that second Mercedes seat, and one of the big contenders right now is the prodigal son, Kimi Antonelli. Could that work? Will Mercedes have the stones to actually, you know, bring him up right away? And I did have some people say, oh, he's not even done F2 yet. He hasn't done a pit stop yet. It's like, he will this year. It's not an immediate thing. He'll get that experience. And they obviously do have a lot of faith in the guy. So there is a chance that they may say, you know what, screw Williams, you're coming straight up, which will be trial by fire. But, you know, like if they got confidence in the kid, then they got to do it. Otherwise, if you do offload to Williams, for example, for at least 2 years, what does that say to the driver that they sign? You know, it'll be like, well, I know that this kid's coming in anyway, so why would I want to sign with you guys? So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, for sure what will happen, but it's also potentially exciting. And ironically, if we can still regard Merck as a top tier team heading into 2025, then it'll be the first time, I guess, since either K-Mag in 2014 or Lewis in 2007, that a rookie's managed to debut in a top tier team. But yeah, I guess we'll have to see.
Alex, I'm going to come to you just on that point with the Antonelli, because Antonelli is the most hyped driver I can remember since Verstappen coming from the junior ranks, and the pressure on that kid's shoulders is sizable. But the Williams point you mentioned there, Josh, they have two drivers themselves who are also rookies this year, and as Chris excellently pointed out, it's a new car. This is essentially a reset for everybody. Is Kimi potentially able to jump the queue in front of Zach O'Sullivan and Franco Colapinto? Or do you think Williams are, especially under James Vowles' leadership, no, this is our team now, and we're going to step away from that Mercedes junior team as they were before? What happens on the Williams front?
I think it's a good question, because Williams have put a lot of faith in Logan Sargeant, but Mr. Antonelli, whose name I'm going to say so many times this year. It is, he leads every single conversation. So they have had loyalty to their driver program. But when you're looking at a potential Leclerc going to want him associated with their team, I would say, having looked for Mercedes, Antonelli would have to completely dominate the championship to have a chance of starting the 2025 season in that Mercedes team. He just does not strike me as a team principal who would take that sort of risk. And no matter how talented a driver is, it is easier to do a Leclerc in a Sauber, a Russell in a Williams, a little bit of giant killing without the pressure of consistently having to perform for what is on paper the second best team in Formula One. I just don't see Wolff putting someone, no matter how good they are, in that situation. However, you need something big, whether it be a world champion, a race winner, or a hotshot talent to replace the presence of Lewis Hamilton. You've got fine men and women at that team who need, there's nothing against George Russell at all. Guy's a mega talent. He's a Grand Prix winner in a season that Lewis Hamilton couldn't win a Grand Prix. But you need something to lift the team. So that's either going to have to be a massive name of huge caliber or a mega talent. But I still don't see Antonelli starting 2025, no matter how he does. He would have to have a Van Dorn-like season of domination to find his way to that team. I think Williams are going to respect their juniors. I think they've done brilliantly with a junior, with Logan Sargeant, been very loyal to him, given him the equipment to have a second season, and backed him when others would not have done. But I think it's going to be far more likely that Williams go, yeah, you're the next Leclerc, Verstappen, Russell, Norris. They'll take him ahead of their juniors, I believe, if he lives up to the hype, which, by the way, is now approaching Mick Schumacher levels. In terms of before an F2 debut. And I never thought I'd see that matched at all. You know, Mick Schumacher, who started Bahrain, his debut round with more press outside his garage in Formula 2 than anyone outside of the top five had for their Formula 1 briefings that weekend. That is where Antonelli is heading to in terms of this interest. And doesn't it set it up wonderfully?
Chris, you've commentated on Antonelli, obviously, for the last year.
Yeah.
And one, he's a lovely kid. He's been on the podcast. Yeah. People should obviously watch that. Watch the rest of the podcast, of course. But he is lightning quick. And the reputation is, it's correct, because he steps into a car. He wins the championship with the first attempt he had it last year in the Winter Series.
Yeah,
he did it in Freco, he did it in Formula 4. But the step up, Freca to Formula 2, the new car does help. And I don't want to make this an Antonelli podcast, because I know that's what everyone's talking about. And there are a bunch of other drivers who also can make the step up. And let's face it, Antonelli has not won the championship against a stacked F2 grid this year. But I think you can be a bit of an authoritative voice on Kimi Antonelli because of your close ties with commentating him for the last year. How good is this kid?
I mean, he's got to be one of the best talents coming into Formula 2 or arguably going into Formula 1 since Lewis Hamilton. He is currently unbeaten in the junior formulas. He's never lost a championship that he's done fully. He won Italian AEA CF4, the F4 FIA Motorsport Games Cup, both Formula Regional Championships. I don't know another driver that's done every single seat of championship they've ever done and not lost it.
How many championships did Max Verstappen win before he reached F1? You know, he didn't win any. There's the point, which is
so. Yeah, I mean, he won two European FIA karting championships as well, back to back, which is where he got his Mercedes backing, which I think Ferrari will be a little bit disappointed about that they didn't notice him a bit sooner. And they weren't backing a lot of karting drivers at that time either. Ferrari were the ones backing a lot of the karting drivers. I don't think I've ever seen a kid that's been so successful. You know, the junior formula is where it's so hard to win because you're all in the same car. And don't get me wrong, he's been with Prema. You know, they are known Kramer and ART are the two top teams throughout the junior ranks. ART have had a bit of a difficult time, you know, we in F3 and Freca, but Kramer, you know, top, you know, the top team, yes, but he's got teammates in the same car next to him, and he's always gone and beat them, and comfortably as well, like Ollie Bearman did when he was with them. So, yeah, he's absolutely fantastic driver. So, yeah, there's a reason why people are already linking him to an F1 seat, and that's because he's never been beaten before. I think it's there is a good reason for it, and I think there is a very good chance that he can get up to speed very quickly in a Formula 2 car. He was very quick in testing as well. He got straight in and was in the top 10, I think, overall. So was, you know, just a few tenths off Ollie Bearman. So I'm very, very excited to see how he does, actually. And he had a lot of Mercedes guys with him, particularly towards the end of the season. Puts a lot of hard work in. And, you know, runs his own kart team now as well, you know, so he gives a lot back to the junior drivers as well. So, yeah, very, 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 very nice kid. And I'm very excited to see how he does.
He is a very quick talent, but he's not unprecedented in the F4 winning two campaigns in the same season, because teammate Ollie Bearman, who I know, Josh, you were a huge fan of, I remember you, I think the quote was, "Kid's got no chill" after his F3 campaign with some of the drives that he had. He was a whisker away from becoming an F3 champ, and who knows what could have happened in that finale had the red flag not happened. Bearman is also, well, he's close to F1, arguably, at the moment. He's got 6 FP1 sessions. Antonelli currently has a bugger all. So he is close to F1 than Antonelli is. Is a championship fight likely to be these two, or are these two the drivers which are in the hot seat to reach F1, as far as you see it?
Wait, who's in this championship? Nah, like, you would have to think it is, because think about it. Like, the Bear obviously comes in with those 2 F4 championships, almost 1 F3, toward the latter half of F2, at least the latter half of F2. He looked wicked fast. And there were a lot of instances last year. In fact, hang on, didn't he have the most wins of all the drivers, or is that just a fever dream?
Well, if only we've got Alex Jakes to tell us this, but I do recall a very, very strong weekend at Baku for Mr. Bear.
Baku, yeah. So he had
4 wins, didn't he? He had 4 wins. Vesti ended up with more.
All right.
But he won more races than the eventual champion. So, and also, yeah, if you consider that Lando Norris only won 1 race in his entire time in F2, winning 4 in your rookie season is pretty immense.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is that we know how quick he is straight out of the box, and the second year you would think he would have to be even faster on top of what we already know he can do. So you've got that, then you've got the prodigal son, and I know that it's a big, it is the biggest ask you can possibly get to throw him into the deep end like that, but, you know, I guess it's just down to whether or not Mercedes really believe in their driver. But with the Bear, at least he's got to be in conversation for the championship. Never mind the top 4. You know, this guy, if Premier are on form like they were this year, then if he's not in contention for the championship heading into Yas Marina, then I would be dumbfounded.
It's stacked grid is what I think, when you look through it. And Alex, at the moment, actually, I was going to ask a question to you, but I'll ask it to Chris afterwards. But for you, Alex, is the only way to F1 right now with a driver program, with an F1 driver program, and therefore we got only 10 of the drivers in the championship capable of making a step up? Or do we see something like Drugovich, who still, by the way, hasn't got a seat, and I'm not considering as an option for F1 at the moment. Can you have a driver who just does excel this year, and then they become the potential to make a step up as well?
Yeah, you absolutely can. You absolutely can race yourself into contention, as we saw with Alex Albon in 2018, dropped by Red Bull. Phenomenal performance. I don't think anyone placed him. Some of the drivers did themselves, but I thought that going into that year, a lot of people assumed that it was going to be Norris versus Russell. and a few other names, Nyck de Vries, obviously in there as well. And obviously, given that it didn't work out for him in Formula One, he gets bashed about, but he was very, very quick, won the title afterwards, was fourth that year, had some big opportunities, wins that got away. Alex Albon raced himself into the conversation. Alexander Albon changed Helmut Marko's mind. Alexander Albon, 12 races later, was a Red Bull driver. So whilst obviously it's heavily weighted towards those in a junior program, in a stacked championship where everyone is already going to be paying attention because Antonelli, there's a viable path to a Mercedes drive, you've got a huge starting point for more eyes being on the championship, just casually, just, you know, oh, what time's the F2 race on? I'm talking about in-team hospitality. The interest is going to be held in there in a way that, and this is, you know, in a way that sometimes it isn't always the case. Speaking to people down in the paddock, obviously, we all know that you should watch every minute of Formula 3 and Formula 2.
As I do, by the way.
Yeah.
Yes, good. I'm glad. And
only for the commentators, not the driving. Who cares about that?
But yeah, you can race yourself into a year like this. You really can. If like a strong third place can change your entire career in the championship.
Just Chris, talk about the Red. You've done so much prep, Chris, and I do apologise that we end up not talking about any transfers because it's such a quiet team. But the junior programmes we've got, so Red Bull Junior team, Isaac Hadjar, Pepe Martin, Mercedes, Andrea Campanelli, Ferrari, Oli Berman, Alpine Academy, Victor Martin, Push Meini, McLaren, Gabriel Bortoletto, the F3 champion who we've not brought up, Sauber Academy, the other news of the week, which is a bit of a transfer, Zane Maloney all of a sudden is joining Teo Porcher, and then Williams Driver Academy, Zach O'Sullivan, Franco Colapinto. Chris, there's a potential champ. Well, there's a champion between those drivers, I imagine. Are these the drivers that we're thinking are going to be in F1 or potentially looking at F1 seat next year?
We're going back in time with Zach O'Sullivan, aren't we? With Lewis Hamilton news, we're almost going back in time. Zach, racing for ART. That's what we saw with George Russell. That's what we saw with Lewis Hamilton as well. They both were successful with ART as British drivers. And, you know, George Russell, we know where he went as well. Zach O'Sullivan's going to be looking to do the same. There's going to be a race for a possible Williams seat between him and Franco Colapinto. And we know how loyal they've been to particularly Zach O'Sullivan. He jumped in that car. So that's an interesting one. Zane, you know, leaving Red Bull and was going to Sauber is very interesting as well. And Rodin Motorsport, newly branded team as well, going into his second season. I'm interested to see how they do. And Victor Martins as well. With, you know, Jack Doohan's almost sitting on the sidelines now, isn't he?
I forgot about Jack.
As we saw with the likes of Nyck de Vries, you can, as Alex mentioned, you can get left on the sidelines and, you know, Victor can go and get himself a title. You can almost leapfrog a driver if you're in at the right time, as we saw in 2018, and put yourself straight into a seat. So, if a seat opens up at Alpine and Victor Martins is successful, that could become his seat over Jack Doohan. Who knows? You know, so that's why this season is, you know, is so important. And then, you know, we've got the likes of Isaac Hadjar, Pepe Marti, who a lot of people are talking about as well. The young Spaniard, an all Red Bull Campos team. They struggled last year, but I think that's a very exciting young driver lineup who they're going to put a lot of backing into.
Josh, I think we're probably going to have this as a final word, a final thought on this. But are the drivers we're talking about right now, as I sort of alluded to, are they leapfrogging? Are we going to be forgetting that we've got two F2 champions who have not made it to F1? Because I had forgotten, in a way, with all the excitement of all this, that Felipe Drugovich isn't in F1. And now we've got Teo Pourchaire, who isn't in F1. And we're talking about all these other 10 drivers who, are they jumping the queue?
It was like 2010, 2011 with Fabio Lima and Davide Valsecchi, isn't it? Like, it's just that unfortunate vacuum where there's just not this, there's no space on the F1 grid. And that's what makes FOM's decision to block Andretti so freaking amazing. And we should all applaud them for their sound. I won't go into the tirade because saving that for another video. But it's just like, again, it's just this lack, complete lack of seats, that it's all a timing thing, you know? Drugo and Teo probably could have been up there if it was the right time, right place. Same with Lima, same with Valsecchi, because Lima was was he in discussions with Virgil Marussia at one point? Valsecchi was in the Renault program, but again, it was just about this, just no space.
Well, Valsecchi was the reserve driver, and they didn't give him. They never used him, did they?
Because remember when
they brought back Mr. Kovalainen, who I used to love as a driver, but like if you're the reserve driver, you should probably be used if there's a space. I thought that was very harsh on Davide before I even knew.
Oh yeah, 100%. But that's sort of where we're at the moment. So it's annoying, but I think that's what we're on. That's where we're in right now. I can see Antonelli and Behrmann getting up to F1 next year. It's a definite possibility. I think Behrmann is actually almost, by the looks of things, a lock for Haas. Yeah. But I don't want to curse this guy because he's a talented guy. But yeah, I think it's just unfortunate timing for Drugo and for Teo. But I could be wrong. But because it's my opinion, it almost certainly is.
At least you're honest, mate. At least you're honest. Listen, guys, we could talk about this forever because it is. What happens if Bottas goes to replace Albon, who goes to replace this, and Alonso goes here and all? We're going to be in for a cracking season. I'm sure this story is going to really, really grow and grow over, the next few days and certainly the next few months. And as a podcast returns in 2024, we'll have all three of you on at various points through the season, I certainly hope. And the Feeder Series world is looking just as exciting as F1, I think you'd all agree. Is there any more comments to have from any of you, or are you all just raring to get the season started?
I would like to publicly thank Lewis Hamilton from the bottom of my heart for doing this before pre-season testing, because I have 8 hours a day to fill in Bahrain when sometimes there isn't even a car on track. So this is a gift for a commentator who has to do F1 testing. Thank you so much.
I'm sure Lewis Hamilton is watching. So thank you, Lewis, for watching. Thank you, everybody else, for watching and listening. We are going to be back with the podcast. We've got a weekly still coming. Look out for that next week, as usual. Chris will be back in hosting duties. But if you'd like to follow anybody on this podcast to hear more from them, check the description below if you're watching YouTube or the podcast show notes. Until next time, which will be somewhat later this month to get prepared for F2, F3, and Freck is coming back and the rest of them, we'll be back on the air as soon as possible. But until next time, we've been the Feeder Series Podcast. Goodbye.